and there wasn't a lot of buffing going on. And so there was just like what I remember just to be these awesome burners just along the line. Turns out that one of the high-rise buildings that were alongside us, there was mirrored walls and everything, but on one of the floors up there was a police station. But people who are really into graffiti are into it 100%, and they're always looking for new inspiration, and they're always trying new things in their black book to try and learn and progress.
Welcome to episode 18 of Toy Division. This one was recorded when actually painting. Bit different, no music in the background. Lots of nice sound effects, trains and whatnot. Anyway, subscribe, share with your mates, give us a 5-star review. Let's jump in. Enjoy. Okay, so welcome to Toy Division. This is a bit of a different flavour. This is going to be done whilst actually painting, so let's see how it goes. So, the person I'm interviewing is buffing the wall, and let's see how this goes. Okay, so let's jump straight into the questions.
Yep.
Where did you get your first ever can of spray paint?
My first can of spray paint was probably in my father's garage, but I don't count that. My real first graffiti can of spray paint was racked from a grocery store. So in Australia, it doesn't happen anymore, but they used to hold spray paint or sell spray paint cans in grocery stores like Coles, Woolworths, Kmart, Franklin's, which I don't think exists anymore, but it's the equivalent of IGA. And they had their own little brand called Performer, which was like a, you know, for odd jobs. I think the can had like a wrought iron picnic barbecue set on it, you know, to spray white and stuff like that. It was pretty crappy paint, but me and my mates had decided to finally do our first piece, and to do that we needed paint. So like the opening scene of Body Rock, if you've ever seen that, it's a breakdance movie for America. They all kind of hit the shops and do their shopping and pinch a couple cans and come out and reveal what colors they've got and then try to do their best with it. We weren't quite as glamorous as the movie Body Rock because they got about, I think they were racking Krylon in that scene, and they all got like really nice colours like Icy Grape and, you know, Safety Yellow and things like that. And we had, I think it only came in 5 colours, this Performer paint, silver, black, red, gold, and like a kind of a navy blue, and maybe like a Brunswick green. That was about all you had, so you can kind of imagine what our first pieces might have looked like with that variety of colours. But
That sounds pretty good, like a limited colour range.
Yeah, it was very limited. I think they kind of thought these are the only colours that people will need to fix things around their house for odd jobs. Silvers and golds for their fences and things like that, I suppose. Pretty boring palette of colours. Certainly not what we have today, that's for sure.
Right. You were saying it was like the beginning of the film. What was that film called again?
Body Rock.
Body Rock. So did you...
one of the least famous of that era of breakdance movies. Everybody's kind of seen Breakdance 1 and 2. And Beat Street is like the, you know, the Bible kind of thing. It come off the back of kind of Style Wars and those types of movies. Body Rock's a commercialised version of one of those breakdance movies. It's not really highly regarded. But the first bit of the movie is awesome. There's a bit where... yeah, they, like I said, they all go into this shop, they steal a bunch of paint, and then they hit up the train yards at night and take photos by the train yards. It was kind of this realistic or glamorous version of what graffiti writing was all about. Like, you get your paint and then you go and hit trains, you know. It all seems so simple to a kid in Australia. our like lifestyle didn't really suit that kind of mission, but yeah, that's what we were kind of living up to.
But it obviously hit a note with you where you thought, this looks fucking cool, I want to do this.
Oh man, yeah. Like all of those early movies made it seem like when you're a kid, you know, you kind of, you see a little bit of graffiti around and different things like that. And then you see these movies and you just think, man, that's what I want to do. This is it, you know, I've found my calling.
Did you try breakdancing?
Yes, I did. Yep. I was really into that. I did that before... graffiti. So yeah, I used to try my best moves on pieces of cardboard on the floor and try and win talent quests in primary school and try and dance my way to fame. And it was fun. It was good. Like anything, I used to be into skateboarding. I know a lot of the guys you've interviewed have said similar things. It was around that era. And it was all kind of competitive. Like, hip-hop's very much like that. And so breakdancing was like that too. You want to have the best moves, or you want to have the coolest outfit and all that type of stuff. And so it's a really easy transition into all elements of hip-hop. But the easiest one to go to next was kind of graffiti, because, again, in those movies, they kind of featured all the elements of hip-hop. And so the next one, kind of after being a good breakdancer, you wanted to be a good graffiti writer. So, so that was my next thing, was to try to pick up the can, learn how to do graffiti.
And also do a whole car when you're doing a head spin.
Yeah, just with a couple of mates with some cans that you've pinched from the grocery store, yeah.
Glamour. All right, well, it's, compared to some of the other people that I've interviewed, a lot of people have gone, I was shit at racking, including me, but not everyone has said that, and that's that stereotypical everything is, I racked my fucking first cans and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, cool. I suppose you just use whatever you can get, I guess, don't you?
Yeah. Graffiti's a good lesson in being frugal, so whatever you can get your hands on. And those first kind of forays into graffiti were probably my first opportunities to kind of steal stuff, and I'm not going to brag about tagging racking stuff either. I wasn't a very good racker, but I did it under the peer pressure of my mates, and we needed paint, like I said, so it wasn't something that you could go out and buy, order online, have it delivered to your house, or go to a graffiti shop. There was no such thing in those days, so the only way to come across some actual spray paint was to purchase it, which there was no way that was going to happen at my age.
And do you want me to do a bit of this buff? So you're not doing the whole lot, or you're all right?
I'll just keep going.
Okay, all right. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. And we'll keep that in as well.
Okay, go. You hold the phone and I'll just keep going.
And I'm really enjoying the train noises in the background. Okay, we've talked about your first ever can of spray paint. I guess next is, where did you do your first ever piece?
Okay, yeah, so equally is cringeworthy. It was in a drain that faced the train track. It wasn't very far from here, actually. It's probably about 10 minutes from here. And people who grew up in southwest Sydney will probably know the place. But it's in a drain. The train actually goes over it on a bridge, and the wall itself is on a 45-degree angle. So it wasn't actually a vertical wall. It was a curved wall, which looked more like a place that you should probably skateboard than paint graffiti. But it was visible from a train, and that was the exciting part about it, is that we thought that whatever we did here was going to be seen by a lot of people. And we probably did it of an afternoon. One afternoon, as you were in those days, you came home, grabbed your bike or your skateboard and headed out with your mates till it got dark. So we're probably trying to race the dark and get this thing done. And yeah, it was on a 45-degree angle. And so we're kind of sliding down this embankment all the time, sometimes over your own piece, trying to concentrate and do an outline on it as well.
It's like an amateur version of the giant piece that Sabre did in the LA River.
Yeah,
but
that same kind of angle, nothing like his piece, that's for sure. It was chrome with a blue outline. And even though it was my first piece, I was still trying to put a few arrows and some embellishments and things in it, even though I was only using two colours. But the other three guys that were with me were also trying to rock a piece. So there was kind of four pieces in our little mission. And, pretty tragic stuff. I never got a flick of it.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, I wish, to this day, I wish. I'd love to have a video of us trying to do this thing on this 45-degree angle. I don't think I've seen... People have pieced different parts of that drain since. I've never really seen anybody do it on an angle like we did. But that's kind of goes hand in hand with how little we knew at the time and how we didn't really know any other graffiti writers or anything like that to kind of show us what to do. So,
and was this at day or night?
It would have been day. It would have been afternoon. And we're probably just trying to beat the dark because we probably had to be home to our parents. So, a little bit sneaky. Every time a train came past, we kind of hid behind some pylons and yeah, we're trying to be as covert as we could, being probably 13 or 14 year old kids. Probably thought that nobody saw us, and probably everybody saw us. They just couldn't be bothered to do anything about it because we were so shit. So yeah, so we got away with the mission, and the pieces stayed there for a while because it was on like bare concrete. It started to grow like a bit of a moss over the top of it and stuff like that. So they weren't the most prolific pieces, but I'm sure somebody saw our work, I guess.
But they lasted.
They lasted a while. Yeah, they lasted a while. They didn't really cop the buff because it was too hard to get to. But there was such a crappy spot that I don't think...
The benefits of doing the most difficult, ridiculous spot. Out of the whole lot.
Never did that spot again. We learnt after that to put graffiti on vertical walls.
Well, maybe you inspired...
Lesson learnt.
Maybe you inspired Sabre. You'll never know.
I doubt that highly. I'll take it, sure.
All right, so that's the first can and the first piece.
Yep.
What was the first name or symbol or, you know, thing that you recognised where you were seeing it and thinking, oh, that's someone doing that repetitively?
Other than things that I'd seen in, you know, skate movies like, you know, the Bones Brigade, things on drains, and like I said, like old breakdance movies and things like that. Things that I actually saw in my own eyes were things on track sides. I was fortunate enough to spend a fair bit of time with my grandparents, and they used to take me into the city on the train. And it was after about the first trip that I realised that I just basically was standing near the windows with my eyes glued looking out the window. And there's all these cool colours, you know. Most surfaces by then were pretty much pieced in Sydney, and there wasn't a lot of buffing going on, and so there was just like what I remember just to be these awesome burners just along the line.
So is this 80s or 90s?
It would have been late 80s.
So the Olympics buff was still a long way away.
No. Sydney was still doing its thing and we weren't really affected by buff yet. Some parts of the track were still like virgin concreted walls, and then other parts were like little bits and pieces of buffing by some probably, you know, worker, but not to the grand scale that they buff now, like with a big compressor and just go down and clear out a wall. There's a lot of other things, like someone mentioned in one of your other interviews about a group called Bugger Up.
Yes.
And they used to kind of attack commercial billboards and things like that, go over cigarette advertising and stuff like that. I remember seeing stuff like that as a kid because I thought it was quite clever, the way they would change the words and stuff.
One flash and you're ash.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that today, driving somewhere, and I was thinking, if you understand that when you're a kid, that's fucking scary.
Yes, yeah. So they were quite a cool group, if you think about it. They were like a crew, I guess, that went around getting stuff in Sydney. I remember that. And another thing I remember, my grandparents live in, kind of in Marrickville, Earlwood area, there was a lot of stuff on the walls that said cops killed Sarkos. And it took me a long time to understand what that meant, but there was a kid who had stolen the car and the police shot him behind the wheel, and he was only 16 years old, and it took about 4 or 5 years for it to be investigated in New South Wales to work out that the police had done the wrong thing and shot a kid behind the wheel. But I just remember all these fences and walls and shops all in that area had cops killed Sarkos. It was kind of all city. Like, people used to do that as a political process or as a protest of some kind. And I remember seeing that everywhere. It wasn't in very good script. It was, you know, it looked like people who'd pick up a can for the first time. But it meant that, like, a lot of different people from different places were kind of up in arms about it. And they wanted the police in the area to know that they weren't happy. So I just remember seeing that everywhere. So a bit of hip-hop graffiti on the train lines, a bit of political graffiti. But yeah, and a lack of buff in those days meant that I saw a fair bit of stuff that kind of influenced me, yeah.
Very different to how it is now in Sydney.
Yeah.
Very different.
Very.
Not just often blank.
No.
Brown or green, depending on which line it is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So the main kind of theme of this is having a laugh at some really embarrassing stories. And other than the, you know, doing your first piece on an embankment, which was kind of at an angle and slipping all over
itself,
it. I then say to people, is there anything you can remember which is really embarrassing? And they say, well, which one? Which one out of the hundreds that I've got?
True.
But is there anything that comes to mind where you just think back and you think, I have no idea what I was doing?
It's a bit of a chase story, an embarrassing story all wrapped into one. I was with my mates on a day off school, and we'd gone into the city with our skateboards to have a bit of a ride around. And of course, all of us had markers in our bags and things like that. And so our group got split up. Some of us stayed on George Street eating Maccas. The rest of us decided to go down towards Darling Harbour. And we wrote on the floor, in like a chalk marker or something, that we were headed down to Darling Harbour so that our mates, when they skated by, would see it and they'd know to catch up with us. This is well before the days of mobile phones or anything else, so you couldn't really talk to your mates if you split up. So we decided to write it on the floor. So we did that. Someone must have seen that. Anyway, on the way down, we're kind of tagging some different things. And we hit up a bridge, and then we looked around, and on one end of the bridge were two police officers, and on the other end of the bridge were another two police officers, which meant we couldn't go anywhere. We were kind of trapped. And turns out that one of the high-rise buildings that were alongside us, there was mirrored walls and everything, but on one of the floors up there was a police station, or a police office anyway. And so they were all sitting up there having their lunch, looking down at us tagging this bridge, and decided to send a couple of officers down to come and get us. So that was a pretty rookie move. And I'd tossed it got quite rough with this actually. I tossed my marker off the bridge, which meant they couldn't find it again, which meant they didn't have any evidence on me. But when we got up to the station, they kind of had us all, you know, talking to us about what was going to happen next and all those types of things. And we kept saying, like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. It wasn't us. I didn't do it. I don't have any marker on my fingers or hands or, you know, all those types of things. And I think I was the most stubborn. They separated me from the rest of the group and put me into a room just with some police officers and told me to sit down on a chair and face the fridge in their coffee room. And the room had two fridges, so there was no way to win. So if I sat down and I faced one of the fridges, they kicked my chair over and pushed me down and said, don't be a smart ass, face the fridge. So I sat back up and faced the other one. And I kicked
it. How old were you at this point?
Oh, this is probably about 14 or 15.
So another example of overzealous.
Very, yeah. They were just a bit pissed off. I think they just wanted us to cop with it and move on with their day, but we weren't going to do that. And so, pushed us around a fair bit, trying to influence us to give it all up.
Yeah.
They couldn't find my marker. They sent a rookie cop down there to go and dig around in the mud for my marker, and he came back with mud up to his knees in his boots, telling me I was going to have to lick all the mud off his boots and all kinds of things. It was a real messy thing for something that was only a couple of texter tags, and still really embarrassing. We didn't end up... We were too young to actually cop any real fines for it or anything like that. We got cautionary warnings, and we came back and rinsed it off ourselves. But the whole thing was just a mistake. Like, we thought we were so cool, 14 or 15 years old, skating in the city and having a day off school, and it turned into this huge, huge
turned
thing.
Out to having your chair kicked out from underneath you due to not looking at the right fridge.
That's right, yeah. And thinking we were kind of invincible and tagging on things when people up in high-rise buildings were looking down through mirrored glass at us.
So, when the cops are on their lunch break. And they don't really want to be interrupted on their lunch
break. That's right, yeah. We were probably as much useless as them as we were to the bridge. So, it wasn't a great day all around, to be honest. Yeah.
So I'm sure that's one of many stories where you think back and you think, oh, what was I doing?
Oh, not even worth it. For a couple of texter tags too, just not worth it.
But I know someone that was in Queensland did a correct pen tag. Big.
Yep. Yeah.
So you can't see what I'm doing. I'm literally just extending out my index finger and thumb.
Yep.
And he got rugby tackled to the ground and 20 hours community service.
See?
Over a corrector pen tag. So the message is, kids and adults, don't do corrector pen tags when you've done loads of pingers. Okay. not that our guest was, but the person I'm talking about in Queensland.
Sure.
Shout out to that guy. We're now at the point where cans are being used. Something's happening at the train station. Should be exciting. Anyway. So, we've talked about the embarrassing story, or stories. We've talked about the first can, the first piece, seeing the first people. I guess the question would be now is, without disclosing your age, what keeps you interested in graffiti now?
I think it's something that's always evolving. So it's not like maybe you play a sport, the sport's always kind of stuck within those same rules. Graffiti isn't like that. It's constantly changing. The things that happen now in graffiti are completely different to things that happened in graffiti when I first started. So it doesn't get old. With the advent of the internet and how much it's spread around the world, there's so many more people doing it, or I'm aware of more people doing it than I was when I was a kid. And that means that I'm constantly seeing new things all the time. And I mentioned before, it's a bit of a competitive thing. I'm a bit of a competitive person. I've played like team sports and I was competitive with breakdancing, or even if it was skating or anything else. I'm the same with graffiti. So you see, you get inspired by other people who are doing work and you think, man, I want to go out and do something too. And so I just feel like I can't sit on my hands while other people are creating cool stuff. I get inspired and want to go out and do some more stuff too. So it always keeps it fresh for me. I always think there's always a new piece, there's always a new connection or a new letter that you can do, or a new colour scheme. So until it gets boring, I think I'll keep doing it. Yeah. And without giving away my age, I'm quite old. but I still find ways to enjoy it even now. It's not something that I get bored of. And there's enough, and as long as you can get yourself together with some other people who are just similarly interested as you, or obsessed by it as you, then you always have reasons to go out and paint. So,
talking about being old, again, not giving someone's age away, yeah, no. But I was listening to a podcast with Bleck Larratt, the guy from Paris, who's often cited as being, you know, the inspiration for Banksy, la la la, whatever. Yes. And he's 66, and he still goes around with his wife, and he has a suitcase, he has his stencils and a can of paint, and he's just walking along. He doesn't dress like a graffiti writer, he doesn't look like a bog standard b-boy sort of character. And he said people find it weird when he just suddenly drops to the ground and he's getting a stencil of a rat and then painting it on a wall and then walking on. And I just often I think that's probably the best way to look.
Yeah.
Super discreet.
Yeah.
And as someone else said on a different episode, you know, who's really going to see it? I think you always think everyone's looking at you.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yeah, that's true.
But we've all learnt the hard way that sometimes they are, especially cops on their lunch break.
Yes. Yeah. And there's that stereotypical look, you know, about it. Do you want to stick out like a sore thumb in a carriage full of people because you look like a graffiti writer? Or are you smarter than that and you want to do something about your appearance that doesn't attract attention to yourself, you know?
So I guess that then segues to the next question is, if you were going to speak to someone who's maybe listened to this or seen some sort of thing online, probably they're thinking, oh, I'm part of 1UP crew now. Because a lot of people put out 1UP and it's like, no, just because it's a big crew doesn't mean you're fucking in it. What advice or guidance or tips or like, I learnt this the fucking hard way, what would you give them advice?
If I was starting these days, I would reach out to people. It wasn't an option for me when I first started painting. I felt very isolated where I grew up. I wasn't near the city, and so I didn't seem to be near where everything was happening, and I didn't know other people that were my age that were doing the things that I wanted to do. So I didn't have people to mentor me or look up to, like that I couldn't look up to, for a very long time. It happened eventually, but it took a long time to do that. But now with the internet and Instagram and different things like that, I get messages from young writers all the time saying, do you want to have a look at my sketch, or how can I make this letter get into this letter, or what do you think of this colour, or what do you think of this spot, you know? And it's all about kind of helping and teaching other people. So if I was a kid growing up these days trying to learn, I would reach out to people. Don't be scared to reach out to people, and try and get as much info from as many places as you possibly can.
Just don't ask people where their yard is and how to get in the yard.
Oh, no. Well, those things are a bit red hot. But
maybe that's just me being an old cunt and going, don't ask people for their spots.
Very, you'll know when somebody doesn't want to give you any information. And that's a silly question. You know, those are things that are earned. But there's other things that, you know, hip-hop itself is about, you know, each one teach one. And you should be passing on some form of what you have gained throughout your career. Maybe not everything, maybe not your yard spots, but other things like that you should be passing, I think, because otherwise you become old and grumpy and you complain about what the next generation are going to be like, and then you've done nothing to kind of improve that next generation who are coming through. So I think you owe it to the culture to try to pass on some of those things if you happen to be given the chance. So I think that's a good thing. So a tip for young writers is to reach out to people. A tip for older writers is to be willing to pass things on to people. I've met people who I thought were going to be my heroes in graph, and they completely snobbed me and didn't even want to engage in a conversation with me. And then from that point on, I thought they were assholes. So, you know, you should be willing to teach people, even if it's only for 5 minutes of your time while you're painting a wall. And then the other thing is to sketch. Just sketch all the time. Like, if you're really into this, you should be in it for life. It shouldn't be like a two-minute thing, because there'd be a million people who said that they used to do graffiti when they were young, and they probably did tag a fence or a toilet cubicle, you know. But that doesn't really mean that you're a graffiti artist. If you're in it, you're in it for a very long time, if you want to be good at it. And you should be practicing your craft, you know. So you should be kind of sketching and thinking about it all the time, like I said, about looking out the window on a train. Well, only graffiti artists really do that. Everybody else just looks at the screen on their phones. But people who are really into graffiti are into it 100%, and they're always looking for new inspiration, and they're always trying new things in their black book to try and learn and progress. So another thing is just to sketch, to improve. The only way to improve is to practice. So just work at it, and it'll come. Yeah.
And I think the other bit of advice is, and to some people, is don't think just because you've seen a spot and you think, oh, that looks sweet, that you can claim it. Don't try and claim back jump spots.
I don't think anybody should claim anything, because I've been told by people that that's my spot and you can't go there, and I laugh, because to truly understand graffiti is to really know its history. And before the invention of the internet, you really didn't know the history. You only knew what your history is. So where you think you were the first person to walk into a place and paint a place, you may be the 20th person to go in there. And just because someone hasn't painted it in the last 2 years doesn't mean you were the first person to paint there. Walls that have been standing along our track sides and yards and different things like that in Sydney have been there for very, very long time. And there are some people who paint them for the last 5 years who say that they're theirs. And I don't think they're anybody's. I think, if anything, they just belong to the city and we just borrow them for a space in time. Just like we paint their trains and we paint their walls, they're not really ours. And that is the essence of graffiti. When people start trying to put rules on it, like, I own this and you can't go there and different things like that, I think you're losing the plot about what it's all really about. If you're not painting it and someone else does, then it only proves further that it isn't your spot, because someone else has gone in there and painted there. So I'm all for respecting spots and looking after them and not heating them up, you know, and, you know, all those things about not leaving cans behind or thrashing, you know, the streets on the way in and the way out and cutting big holes in places that are unnecessary. That's all about looking after a spot. But I think we all need to look after a spot together. I don't think it's one person's spot or place. And if someone paints where you think was yours and you weren't there, it just further proves that it wasn't yours. Yeah.
Solid. That's pretty solid advice.
Yeah, I don't know. I might upset people to talk that way. But, you know, I think when you paint long enough and you know that, you know, different things happen in your life, you paint, you know, really hard for 1 year, and the next year you might paint half as hard. Other people are going to go in there and paint that spot. And it's silly to sit at home on your lounge going, you can't paint there, that's mine, and expect everybody else to just stay away from it because you don't paint there anymore. So yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to now to stop recording. So thanks very much. I don't normally ask for shout outs now because no one wants to shout anyone out. So yeah, sweet. Thanks, mate.
All right. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Right. Episode 18. Done. Very different vibe. With no music in the background, but I really like the noise of the birds, the trains, the spray cans, and the rollers. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, share us with your mates, check out our Instagram, toydivision_podcast, and like I just said, share with your mates, because I want as many people as possible to hear these stories. We're going to keep going. Change path a little bit, maybe talk about some health stuff, mental health stuff, and, you know, just help people out. Thanks for all the great feedback. Peace out. Toy Division.